You know, I often say that having the chance to visit parks is one of those gold nuggets of being the director. Well, I've got to tell you, this is 24 karat gold being with you today. I am honored to stand before you as your 17th director of this great agency, the National Park Service. Thank you for your commitment to the service by attending this summit. I know you all are certainly in the middle of a busy season, and many have traveled a long way, like those from Alaska, Hawaii, Puerto Rico, and the Virgin Islands. Thank you, Joan, for such an unexpected introduction. I really do appreciate that. I'd like to know who gave you those photos. Phil, thank you. Before I move on with my remarks, I would like to recognize our past directors. I felt it was very important to do that this morning, those that are still with us and those that are departed. As many of you know, 2 weeks ago, I attended the funeral of the 7th director, George Hartsog, in Walterboro, South Carolina. He was a dear friend to me, not just to me, but to many. A man who I truly respected for his intelligence, his passion, and his leadership. Whenever I think of George Hartsog, my mind's eye goes to the photo that you saw this morning of George holding a big cigar, glasses on the end of his nose, almost like Winston Churchill. It's a powerful photo of a very powerful man. Supremely self-confident, he was the product of an era, of a great era of confidence in this country. During a time in our nation's history that we felt up to any challenge. A time when the National Park Service would undergo vast expansion and diversification. And that was an effort that was led by George Hartsog. I'm sure many of you know that Helen and his family are planning a memorial service in Washington at the end of this month, and I hope that many of you will attend. I would like to think that George is looking down on us today at this gathering, because I know George would see the value of us getting together and sharing information. When I was coming up through the Park Service in the old Southwest region, superintendents' conferences were very special. Not just for the chance to see old friends, but to really expand our networks and have great conversations about what's happening in our parks and programs, what works well, and what could be adopted by others. Above all, we could leave the conference with a common goal and certainly an esprit de corps. Together, we could make great things happen in our parks. I hope it is true for this gathering as well. More than anything, I truly appreciate listening to many of the seasoned senior superintendents who made me feel so welcome. Don't say that with a gin and tonic. At my first superintendents conference, I met, many of you remember, Dave Mihalik, who went to school, so you all know, in a village in Leicestershire in England. My husband was stationed at Bruntingthorpe Air Force Base, and his father was a pilot at that base. At that same meeting, I met Mike Finley, superintendent at Yellowstone. The true value of the summit will be in hearing how colleagues worked through very tense issues. This is also a time for me as director to talk to you face to face about important issues that affect our service. Take fires, for example. Last month, I traveled to Golden Gate National Recreation Area. Even before we landed at San Francisco Airport, I could see the haze over the countryside. Not the famous smog or fog, but the smoke of fires. I immediately could smell the smoke as getting off the plane. It filled my nostrils at Fort Baker and again when I visited Muir Woods. It was a clear indication that the fires were close at hand. This is a dangerous situation for our Department of Interior and the National Park Service firefighters, who are out there on the line protecting homes, wildlife, forests, and certainly our parks. This is going to be a very tough season. Our fire managers in the Pacific West say they are seeing unprecedented fire behavior with higher temperatures and low humidity. And as I learned when I was out at Golden Gate, the so-called fire season is now becoming a year-long issue. Another indication of our changing climate. Both Secretary Kempthorne and the Secretary of Agriculture are engaging and talking with the President and governors. On this, I know he will talk further of his involvement. He has been a great supporter. We are at preparedness level 5. We all know what level 5 means to us. You have already seen our orders to parks to free up staff, to help with fires, to make sure that our folks that are qualified for certain jobs get out there and take care of the fires. I know that many of you throughout our service have already pitched in to help. There is even a crew from the National Park of American Samoa. Let's keep our fire crews in our thoughts during this conference and throughout the fire season. As you know, this summit is organized around what I call my trifecta of goals. What you may not know is how they came about. Just prior to my confirmation hearing in the Senate, October the 17th, I was told that one of the questions the committee would ask me, what are your goals going to be as the next director of the National Park Service? You know, I thought a lot about that evening. And certainly, I was prepared the next morning, and I was prepared because I had been a career employee, one with in-depth knowledge of the National Park Service, its mission, and its people. I told the committee that in addition to remaining true to the mission of the National Park Service, I had 3 goals, and I bet every one of you could recite them. I won't put anybody on the spot. Re-engage the American public with their parks, increase the capacity of the system, and to make sure that we prepare the next generation of leaders for the parks. Each one of these goals supports the mission of our responsibilities under the Organic Act. And like a tripod, each leg is needed to support the whole. We cannot provide for enjoyment if we do not engage and encourage all Americans to enjoy their parks. We cannot preserve resources if we do not have the capacity in the parks to do so. And when we hang up our Stetsons for the final time, we must hand the parks over to a new generation who are prepared to meet the challenges of the 21st century. When you consider the history of the service, we have addressed these issues before. And we have been preceded by individuals of great talent and ability who moved the park service forward. For us, this is an exciting time. Let's seize this time and really move this service forward and continue to be great leaders on many fronts. This is not a time to coast. Seize this great moment. I know there are many of you here that will retire over the next few years. Where is JT Reynolds in this group? JT, where are you, sir? Where is JT? JT, please stand up. Please, sir. You know, good friends don't have to speak often, do they, JT? We just know what each other are thinking. This man has how many years service, JT?
When I retire,
it'll
be
41
years of federal service.
41 years. You betcha. I would like the rest of you to stand up that's going to be retiring this year so that we can acknowledge your service, your time to this great agency. I'd like you to stand up. Gail, sit down. Okay, how many around the room are standing, JT? Okay, JT, that changes this script. JT, thank you, sir. It was a pleasure to talk to you last week. We have made great progress in many areas. Our task is to take what we have achieved to date and help now move it to the next level. So in addition to celebrating our success, I feel these next 2 days will challenge us as well. When I speak of re-engaging Americans with their national parks, I follow the lead of my predecessors. At the Discovery 2000 conference, Bob Stanton talked about shifting demographics of America, while the culture and the values of this changing America were not yet really woven into the national park system. And even earlier, the statement from the 1922 Superintendents Conference in Yosemite asserted that the mission of national parks is to provide not cheap amusement, but healthful recreation, and to supplement the work of schools by opening the doors of nature's laboratory, they say in England, to awaken an interest in natural science and as an adjunct to the commercial and industrial work of the world. So it should be clear that we have always talked about reaching people, both with their national and cultural heritage, and encouraging the people of this nation to be good stewards of our places. We have made good progress, but we have a lot more to do. You have all seen the report, Salute to Service, which outlines many of our achievements from last year. The first such report for our service as a whole. The first time we've put a report together as a whole, what does that tell us? And together we have achieved much in reaching out to Americans and engaging them with their national parks and educating them too about being good stewards. We have welcomed over 275 million visitors, an increase of 3 million people, more than pro football, baseball, basketball, NASCAR, and Disney combined. But this is not a time to rest on our laurels. We are still significantly down from the peak visitation season of the mid-1990s. We pledged 439,000 new junior rangers, the future stewards of our parks. We engaged kids with families with bio blitzes at Rock Creek Park, beetle blitzes at Boston Harbor, good luck to you, Bruce, and spider blitzes at Congaree National Park. We introduced hundreds of thousands of urban archaeology at Independence National Historical Park. We told the story of Africans enslaved only a block away from Independence Hall. Sand Creek Massacre National Historic Site became the 391st site in our national park system. And we celebrated, the Secretary and I, along with the 50th anniversary of the desegregation at Little Rock High School. While I single out a few examples to mention, there are hundreds of similar stories throughout our 391 sites. I called the report a salute to service for a darn good reason. It was really to praise you, to praise the 20,000 men and women of the National Park Service for their dedication. And I praise you today as strong leaders for making great things happen at our parks. And I know, because I come from the field, that you are often very humble about your achievements. Well, maybe not all of you are extremely humble. And I won't name names, but anyway. We have done good things, as we say, but shame on us if we cannot do more and make the nation feel welcome at all our sites and that their story is being told. Shame on us if our workforce cannot reflect the face of America, as Bob Stanton has often said. There are so many of you doing well in diversity, and we can learn from them. Where are you, John Jarvis? John, stand up, please, sir. John Jarvis is doing a great job in the Pacific West region. Where are you, John? At the back. That's all right, John. When I go to the Pacific West, I see the face of America. And I'm really happy that David Vella is now our Southeast Regional Director. Where are you, David? Stand up. David, some might say that I tried to kill him. You know, I placed the phone call and offered him the job, and then I heard he was promptly taken to the hospital. But I'm glad you're here, David. You look great. We are not here simply to hear a speaker and sit through a breakout session. This is our chance to network among ourselves, to share among ourselves what is working at individual parks, and to help others along the road. Whether it be brainstorming potential solutions to issues that we face, or taking concrete steps to put into reality best practices. I hope you will have those conversations during breaks and during meals, and after hours, and I hope you do that with a beverage of your choice. I know you seasoned senior superintendents will help our newest colleagues and give them encouragement and advice like many did for me. Of the 20,000 men and women in the National Park Service, at any given time, there are only 350 of you that carry that very special title. To be a superintendent is an honor. It is an awesome responsibility. You have an obligation to manage parks in accordance with the mandates of Congress and the legislation, not your own agendas. In many ways, you are indeed a very special group of people. That was not my assessment alone, but one from the late newsman Peter Jennings, who was on the National Constitution Center board and a friend of mine. He told me about his opinion of park superintendents and said, "I have the utmost respect for you. You are a member of a very special and elite group of people. The American people trust us to protect the resources entrusted to our care. So among the questions we must consider are, what is the role of the national parks in protecting and restoring ocean life and marine ecosystems? How do we maintain ecological integrity while securing our borders? Facing extreme weather events, increased competition for water, which I know our secretary was very involved in, and increase in invasive species, wildlife diseases, and forest diseases. With the renewed emphasis on scarce energy reserves, how do we reconcile the need for energy exploration with the mandate to preserve our parks unimpaired? How can we address the issues beyond the boundaries, such as pollutants that move hundreds of miles to affect our parks? How do we best identify and manage networks of protected areas? An effort that includes not only bureaus of the Department of Interior, but other federal agencies as well. How do we protect people to their natural resources and cultural resources with a focus on children and minorities? Do we need a cultural resources initiative the same as the natural resources initiative? I would say yes, we do. Where are you, Kate Stevenson, Jan Matthews? And many in this room have said to me, yes, we do need a cultural resources. I came from a premier park at Independence, and we absolutely should be focused on that. I would say we do. Just as the Natural Resource Challenge focused our attention on natural resources across the system, a cultural resource initiative would assist 2/3 of our parks that have cultural resources as their focus. What does the future hold for the 40 National Heritage Areas, with an additional 19 now proposed in the Omnibus Public Lands Management Act of 2008? Sustainability. Our centennial goal stated that the MPS must be a leader in sustainability. I am very proud of this agency in leading in being green. But we must continue that effort. We must consider visitation patterns as well. I saw a new term the other day, and John, you and I have talked about it. It's called staycation. That's a vacation where people stay home, probably because of gas prices. This is a great opportunity for parks to reconnect their gateway communities and to get families to parks that are near to their homes. I know I preach to the choir, but I think it's need to be reminded. Throughout the system, people are doing great work, and it is now time for you to share those achievements and challenges with our colleagues and also the citizens of America. The National Park Service needs a communication plan that will use the centennial as a vehicle to communicate with the American people about what parks do for this country and what can we do to engage our citizens, so that they become citizens in conservation. And you will hear more about that tonight from Charles Jordan. I look forward to your speech, sir. I have assigned this communications plan and implementation strategy to the Centennial Office under Lindy Harvey's supervision. And when they reach out to you for ideas and feedback, I know you will continue to respond as you've always have done in the past. You do great things in your parks. You guard them the way a parent protects their children. I don't have to tell you to avoid commercializing your parks or to protect your resources from poachers or relic hunters. What I will do is encourage you to think about the system rather than the individual parks. I ask you to walk in another person's shoes and see ourselves as they do. Help us think of ways that we can connect and cooperate with each other. During the second day, we will spend time talking about our upcoming centennial, both current issues and issues of the future, the issues of the future of centennial funding to help increase the capacity of our parks. And that makes perfect sense. The centennial will arrive in 2016, ready or not. We will hear more about the centennial, especially from our comptroller, Bruce Schaefer. Where are you, sir? I knew it. He has a wealth of experience on the Hill. As many of you know, the nation's capital moved from Philadelphia to Washington, Bruce, in 1800. And I hear that Bruce was part of the welcoming party. I give great credit to an awesome guy, Secretary Dirk Kempthorne, for looking ahead, seeing the approach of the centennial, and doing something about it. Just as Mission 66 began a decade earlier, our centennial efforts have begun. It will be up to us to continue the momentum for the next 8 years. We have made a great start, the biggest operating increase in the history this fiscal year. 3,000, yes, boy. That is huge to us. 3,000 new seasonal employees, and I have met many of those seasonal employees at your parks. We have 45 new positions for volunteer coordinators. That's huge for us. We cannot do it alone, but rely on 167,000 volunteers to help run our parks. You know, at times, and this is fair warning, I have stopped at parks to check on superintendents unannounced. Isn't that right, Susan Traill? Russ Smith? Where is Susan? Where are you, Susan? Right at the back. When I stopped at Monocacy back in June, who was the first person that I encountered in that visitor center? Yes, a volunteer. She was a great volunteer. I said to her, have you volunteered in other parks? She said, yes, 15 years as a volunteer at Valley Forge before coming to Monocacy. And when I asked her who was the superintendent, she looked at me and said, gosh, I don't know. I don't know. That really does show me how humble you all are as a group. I was here in Utah a month ago speaking to the International Mountain Bike Bicycling Association. And before I did, I called Woody Smek, as you all know, Woody is the superintendent at Santa Monica Mountains, to ask him about a very special group of volunteers at his park. The Mountain Bike Unit Volunteers Program at Santa Monica Mountains has been in place for over 20 years. I always go out and test the waters before I move with many of my speeches. The unit has approximately 150 members, and 20 to 30 are riding every day trails in that national park, and they are giving visitors a rewarding experience about safety and about destinations, about conservation and being good stewards. They have created a conservation and stewardship mindset in people who are originally coming to the park with a primary focus on health, recreation, and fitness. There are many success stories like this, but I remember in our report to the president that we set a goal to double our volunteer hours by 2016. And while the 45 new coordinators are a great beginning, we must continue to expand that program and expand that program to make sure that our parks are receiving the benefit from this program. We must demonstrate to Congress and to the American public that we can effectively manage funds from this year's appropriation, whether it is contracted construction or rolling out a program. And we must do it efficiently and with transparency. While the centennial legislation is clearly in the hands of Congress, we have many allies in this effort. Our legislative affairs folks in the Park Service and the Department, our budget team as well, our members of Congress, especially Mr. Dix, Mr. Tehart, and Mr. Bishop from this great state of Utah, a great team of superintendents who helped refine the proposed centennial projects, and all of you who are making the extraordinary effort to hire those extra seasonals and implement those programs and working with your partners. My thanks to all of you. And certainly I cannot fail to say thank you to my own team, Deputy Directors Dan Wink and Lindy Harvey. Would you please stand up? They are a great team. I said, you know, this speech is a little bit dry. And so we talked about that, and Lindy said, you know, Mary, I represented you at the National Park Service Folklife Festival that was on the Mall, the National Mall, and she was thrilled to have Governor Perry make her an honorary citizen of Texas, due in part to her large Texas hair. Lindy said I'd try to get it higher for you today. I figured that Dan would want some of that big hair too. Until I found out he had an afro. I said through the 70s. He said, oh, contraire, Mary, it was through the 80s. Is that true?
Yes.
Yes. I'm going to get that photo. On a more serious note, I would like to thank the entire National Leadership Council for your support, not only with the centennial, but on many issues that we face on a daily basis. And I would ask the members of the NLC to please stand up and be recognized. I am proud to work with you. Please, all of you, stand up. We have a great team. We will round out our gathering with a true high point, a preview of the forthcoming series, National Parks, An American Story. Filmmaker Dayton Duncan has worked with Ken Burns to trace the beginnings of the national park system. From the early days, preserving the great natural parks, to the establishment of the parks in Alaska in the early 1980s. You all know what a magnificent job they did with the Civil War series. You will love this series as well. A few weeks later, I asked the National Leadership Council this question. When the next Ken Burns documents our times, what will it say about us? In that documentary of the future, the film will no doubt talk about places like the addition of the Lawrence Rockefeller Preserve at Grand Teton National Park, the remaking of Independence Mall in Philadelphia, new parks like the African Burial Ground and Sand Creek Massacre. I hope that it will talk about how we've expanded the stories that we tell, giving an accurate portrayal of events in our history, and teaching visitors about issues about global climate change and what we can do to help. I hope it will talk about how the people in this room seize this opportunity offered to them by the centennial, and that we also help prepare the next generation of leaders for our parks. And when that future documentary talks about the people in this room, I hope it will say of us that we did our best to leave these parks better than we found them. And that, thank you. And that is what this conference is truly about, the future of our parks. This is a great time for us, but for our parks, it's an even better time for the future. For many of us, the future is a few years or even a few months. And again, I say, how many of us in this room will be here even by 2016? It is up to you to help John Jarvis set the backcountry cabin for the next occupants, the next generation of leaders for our parks. You all know that in the backcountry, they make sure they leave the firewood and they leave that cabin ready for those next rangers to come in. We have brought many of them here today to ask these future leaders, and I ask them to stand up so that you can welcome them to this conference. Please, all of you, the new future emerging leaders in the National Park Service, stand up, please, so we can recognize you and see your faces. Will be a major force in the decision making and the preservation of the future of our national parks. And that begins today. We have the right people in the right place at the right time. So let us move forward and remember that we must follow the mandate of the Organic Act, a sacred trust from the American people, those who came before us, those with us today, and those generations to come. I know you will not let them down, and for that, and for all you do each and every day, I thank you from the bottom of my heart. Thank you.